Welcome to the new season of the Go Glow podcast. I'm so delighted to be back. Thank you. Honestly, thank you for tuning in. And I know you're going to get so much from today's episode. Anna is, it's actually like a pep talk from your best friend. You are going to walk away from this episode feeling on top of the world. This season of The Good Glow is brought to you with thanks to Dove's new Advanced Care Body Wash. I've been using this all summer and my skin is so glowy and feels so soft. I'm thrilled to be working with Dove this season. Very, very grateful to them for their support. So unlike ordinary body washes, Dove Advanced Care is made with 24-hour renewing micro moisture. It's a groundbreaking new technology from Dove that deposits millions of tiny but powerfully moisturizing droplets that, instead of getting washed off, absorb deeply and continuously work with your skin's natural renewal process to strengthen your skin's barrier and help retain and boost moisture even after your shower. So we all love an upgrade, especially this time of year. So why not upgrade your showers and use Dove's new Advanced Care Body Wash, available now nationwide. So I ordered Anna's book during the summer. It's called My Own Magic, and straight away I just devoured it. Anna was married to a famous magician, and looking at her life you would think, wow, she has it all. She even lived on a cruise ship at one stage, but she felt completely invisible. She says, at 30 years old, my husband left me, and with him vanished my job, home and future. I was devastated, ashamed, and most of all, terrified. She had built her entire world and identity around her relationship, and now she was left with nothing. This is such a great story about a woman rediscovering the magic that she had always had. Anna Klutz today shares her story of starting over in the city that she always loved, Paris. And you know what? It is so important sometimes to reconnect with yourself, refocus and reset. And that is what the September Reset is all about. My brand new course is starting on September 2nd. It's 14 days, 10 minutes a day, and such a great opportunity to clear your path and make room for the life you want to create. So I'll leave a link to the September Reset in the show notes. Now, over to Anna. Anna Klutz, welcome to the Good Glow podcast. I'm so happy I get to say that.
Well, you said you manifested it, and I definitely believe in that. So here we are.
I know. It's just so crazy. You're speaking to us from your gorgeous Paris apartment, living your best life, as we'd say over here in Ireland. But you went through such a journey to get there. And the fact that even if you're reading it, and you're in a happy relationship, your book still makes women feel seen.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that there's true power in hearing other people's stories when they're not holding back, when they're telling the real story and telling the truth of it, that there's real power in that, because a lot of us share, but we don't share the hard stuff. You know, we don't really share the real feelings when it becomes, well, this is going to make me look a bit bad, or this is a bit embarrassing to admit, or I'm ashamed of this and I don't really want anybody to know it. So the things we hold back are the things we actually need to share the most, so that other people know when they are also feeling embarrassed or ashamed or let down or any of those things, that it is normal, because those feelings can become insanely isolating when you have them. And when you look around and think nobody else has ever, you know, gone through this and felt this, you know, that's when you start to then feel even worse about your situation, because now you feel crazy on top of it all. So I knew that just in sharing the reality of what I really felt through the whole process, through the process of falling in love to this marriage isn't really working for me, is it, to now it's over and what the hell am I gonna do, would connect people, because we've all been there in some way or another, whether it's a marriage or a relationship or losing a career or losing something else in our life that we felt like we wouldn't be able to live without. We've all been there.
Yeah. So for anyone listening, I suppose, like, there is so much to your story, and it's The book is so special and so intimate and so beautiful. But could you tell us a little bit, I suppose, about your life before, your before life, as you call it?
Yeah, I grew up in Ohio. I was the baby of five kids, and I had like a very, you know, typical, like all American childhood in the US. My grandparents lived down the street. We did everything as a family, always. You know, when there's already five of you, like you're not inviting friends along for the vacation or the night. Like we were always kind of each other's best friends, and we did a lot as a family. And I, you know, I didn't really travel anywhere. We went to the beach in South Carolina once a year as a family, but that's all we could do. We weren't flying to Europe or taking elaborate vacations. So what became very interesting to me was to discover these things that I really loved as an adult, like France and like being as far away on the other side of the world as I could possibly be. It was beautiful because it really made me realize like this is innate. Like this is like innately me. This isn't something I grew up doing and loved. Like these are my own discoveries of what I love. And when something hits you like that, that isn't kind of ingrained in you from the beginning, it is just like deep, deep down who you are. It hits you like a ton of bricks because you're like, this is really cool. Like the fact that this has just lit my heart on fire is not because someone told me it should. It's because it just naturally does.
Well, an interesting shift in the book, I thought, was that you were on this beautiful journey of discovering who you were and what you loved. And then you fell in love and almost sacrificed everything for love. And you're such a romantic, and you know, there's so many of us out there that are. And it's so relatable, I suppose, to give up so much of yourself for the greater good of us.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the time when you're in that moment, you don't, it's only in retrospect that you realize how much you've given up, because it's happening little by little. And for me, over a period of 10 years, that when it's like that, when you're slowly giving away this or giving away that or giving away that, you don't see it as this like huge giant sacrifice of everything that you are. It's when you stop and look back, and so much of it I truly didn't even understand the enormity of until I was writing this. Because when you really are going back and dissecting everything, you're like, wow, yeah, okay, and that, and yeah, I had to do that, and I lived like that, and I gave up that. Like, you're not keeping score day to day when you're in a relationship, especially when you're hoping that relationship ultimately works, especially when you're in love with this person and you're willing to give up anything. You're not keeping a tally board of who did this and who did this day to day. So sometimes you don't really get it until the end. You don't see how much of yourself you've lost.
Yeah, it's such a privilege, obviously, to write a book, but to reflect on your life, because I think we're always moving forward. And sometimes we become so distant from ourselves. And I know there's so many women in Ireland that listen to The Good Glow, and it may be grief, it may be work, it could be family life, it could be a partner. And they say to me a lot of the time, I don't know who I am anymore. So for you, it took, what I thought was interesting was the end of a relationship, or one door had to close for the next door to open.
I think it's very normal to arrive at that exact place of what you just said. I don't know who I am anymore, or maybe I never knew. Because the fact is we start giving away a lot of ourselves very early on, usually because of a relationship. We're giving a little bit away of this and this. Every relationship takes compromise. So you're who you are for the first, you know, 16, 17, 18 years of your life. That first like serious relationship you enter at whatever point that is, but for most of us, it's early 20s probably, that your brain starts to think like, is this the one? I need to be finding someone, because this is what society is telling you. Your ultimate goal is to get married. And so you're in this mode already of like, okay, well, I'm willing to compromise this to make this work. I'm willing to give up this. I'm willing to give up this. A lot of us give up parts of ourselves for what we're going to study because we're pressured into, you need to have this kind of job. This is the only kind of job that is stable. So this is what you need to do. So maybe we're trading away passions we really love because we no longer have the time to devote to them. All of these things are very normal. But when you stop and really dissect it, you're like, look how much of what I love I've given away for something else or someone else or some other goal. And that's why at 30, when I suddenly had, you know, kind of like my whole life blow up, I went back to what did 18-year-old me really want her life to look like? What were, I revisited this bucket list I made at 19 years old, sitting in Paris during my semester abroad, of everything I wanted to do and what I wanted my life to look like then. But then, of course, I took into account, what have I learned about life and how has that changed over the last 10 years? And I made a new bucket list. And then I kind of looked like, where's the overlap? Some things I've achieved, that's amazing. What things are still there that I wanted at 18 and I still want now? I need to go after that. You have to kind of take what you've learned, but then also dig back into who you were before you started trading away who you were.
Wow, that is, that should be a TED talk. Like, that is so good. It's so simple, but I love that, that what were all my, you know, hopes and dreams and ambitions back then? What are they now? What overlaps and what can still be a possibility, which is everything. You spoke in the book about, you know, the first time that you were faced with a divorce and you hung on for dear life and you gave it another, your relationship another chance, and you sacrificed a lot for that second chance. But then when the news came again a year later, you know, I want a divorce, your reaction was so different.
Yeah.
Do you wish you went the first time?
No, or? Definitely not. And that's what's important is the first time, about a little over a year and a half before we actually got divorced. I talk about this in my book. My husband, you know, kind of, I was kind of blindsided, completely blindsided, was suddenly like, I'm not happy. I want out of this. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Because, like, to me, I knew we were having some problems. We were fighting. You know, this is marriage, right? It's never this, like, perfect road. But to me, none of them were huge. And I still wasn't totally aware of how unhappy I was, because I was just trying to believe that it was going to be okay and that it wasn't that big of a deal. And I fought so hard to keep that because I wasn't willing at that point to admit that it wasn't right. I wasn't certain that it was. And I really do believe that if at that point my marriage had ended, I wouldn't be where I am now. Because at that point, I was like, oh my gosh, something must be so terribly wrong with me if this person wants to leave me. And I dug so deep into myself, and I talk about this in my book. What do I need to do better? What do I need to fix? And I started, so much of myself I'd already given away, I started offering up everything else. Do you want me to quit this? Do you want me to stop this? I'm sorry. I'll cheer louder. I'll spend less time away from, you know, I'm offering up now everything that I've held back to make this work. And over the next year and change, we started therapy as a couple. And then I kept going on my own when he stopped going with me. And it was over that year and a half then that I came to the realization of, like, this isn't a me problem. Like, I am not the problem. I shouldn't have to give up everything about who I am to make this marriage work. I shouldn't have to be trying to convince someone to love me every day. And that year and a half was pivotal for me to realize I have done everything I could. I have given everything that's reasonable to give away. And when a year and a half later, it still wasn't enough and it still wasn't working, it wasn't much easier to swallow what the reality of, like, my marriage is falling apart and I'm about to get divorced. But I was like, I was just at peace with it. I was like, okay, like, we have tried everything. I have given up everything. And I know now that I need to walk away from this. I didn't know that the first time. And if I would have had been, like, forced to walk away from that, not knowing for sure that it wasn't because of me, I might have never been okay.
It's just, I suppose it's to have that trust in your journey and Dr. Libby Weaver, she's this amazing women's health expert in Australia. She says that for so many women, we actually forget how precious we are. And I feel like you deep down knew how precious you were. You knew you had more to give. And I think that knowing helped you trust yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I honestly talk about therapy so openly because it truly saved me through this period of my life. Like, I think the fact that during that year and a half, I was going to a therapist weekly and really finally telling someone I haven't had, telling someone all the things I hadn't told. I say this in my book. It was like, I was asking friends and family for help. I was giving them tidbits of info, but not the whole story. Because again, there were things that were too embarrassing. There were things I was too ashamed of. I didn't want to say this about my ex-husband and then have my best friends not like my ex-husband anymore. So I was giving a bunch of people different pieces of a puzzle, not all of them, but little pieces, but then asking them to solve the puzzle for me. And it wasn't until I had my therapist that I gave her every single piece of the puzzle. And she helped me see the big picture because she had all the pieces. And that was huge to not only realize my own self-worth, but to realize what I was really capable of and to see everything all in one picture finally.
Gabby Bernstein says the wound is the place where the light enters you. So what was your rock bottom moment in it all?
I mean, that for sure. That first, like, I'd say at least like that month afterward, because, you know, not only was I like, okay, this is happening, there's nothing I can do about it, but then I was like, I have nowhere to live. I realized I can't rent an apartment. I had no job. There was no future for me renting an apartment, because you can't sign a lease if you don't have an employment and like a couple months rent to show under your belt. And I hadn't been working for the last 7 years. So I realized like I suddenly have no way to even get myself a home. I am now going through this divorce. I don't know what I'm going to do for my job because I have the weirdest resume in the world. I studied fashion, then I sold really expensive doorknobs, and now I'm an ex-magician's assistant for the last 7 years, and I don't have any paycheck to show for that. And I was like, who's going to hire me? Like, I was freaking out for a while of like, it just seemed like everything was a disaster, and I was 30 years old and had nothing to show for it, and nothing was headed in the right direction that's definitely how it felt like. And even looking back, I completely understand why I felt that way. Like, nothing at that point made sense. And I was in that place for at least a month and like truly just sobbed all day, every day. Like there were times I would kind of pull it together for a second, but like my mental state for a while was not good.
And so it's so good to talk about therapy, because I talk about therapy so much on the podcast. So it's so good for people to have that resource. And I loved that your therapist actually gave her opinion and spoke back to you, because my therapist does that for me too. It's the best.
It's what I wanted. I was like, I'm not, I want to just pay you. If I just wanted to talk at someone, like, you know, fine, I can do that to anybody. Like, I want someone to tell me what they think, even if I don't agree, or even if it's harsh to hear, you know, this is why I'm doing this.
Yeah. You spoke about gaslighting yourself. Did your therapist make you see that you were doing that? Or did you realize that when you were reflecting?
I think she definitely helped me realize it, because I would, you know, I would say something that I had accepted as normal, or convinced myself was normal. And she would stop me and be like, are you okay with that? You know, like our apartment, for example, you know, I lived in this apartment that was my ex-husband's for 10 years. And it was his family owned apartment. And it was completely decorated with his collection of antique magic. And I couldn't disturb the decor, you know, nothing. We weren't redoing it. Like, it wasn't visible that I lived there. There wasn't like a book of mine on a shelf. And when I told, you know, this came out in therapy, our living situation. And she was like, are you okay living like that? And I was like, well, you know, we have no choice. It, you know, started making all the excuses. Well, we have to live here because of this. And what's he supposed to do? Run a storage unit for his stuff. And, you know, one day what? Are you okay living like that? And that's when I was like, no, I'm not. I hate living here. I hate it. I hate living this apartment. Like, it, you know, the emotion comes right back. Like, it, you so easily make all these excuses for why you aren't allowed to be upset or feel this way or not want that. And I would say, I'm being selfish. I'm being ungrateful. I'm asking for too much. And she was instrumental in helping me realize, like, at the end of the day, you have to listen to your own self and what it's trying to tell you. And you can't make excuses that you're not, you know, that you don't have the right to feel that way. You have the right to feel that way.
Oh my God, so powerful. Just a short break to thank Dove Advanced Care Body Wash for supporting the Good Glow this season. 2024 is a big year for Dove. This is their best ever body wash with 24-hour renewing micro moisture. If your self-care needs an upgrade, you can choose to either pamper, deeply nourish, hydrate, gently scrub, or revive with 10 gorgeous variants. And I just can't decide my favorite. It's also free from sulfates, very important, has biodegradable ingredients, and is packaged in recycled plastic bottles. So say goodbye to dry skin this season and step out feeling more beautiful and confident in your own skin with thanks to Dove Advanced Care Body Wash. Let's talk about the best day ever, can we?
Yeah, of course.
And just the, I suppose, the difference in perception from, you know, two different points of view.
Yeah. What was so beautiful about that, and I say this when anyone asks for advice about helping someone through grief, about consoling someone who's going through something hard. Everyone looks at you, everyone matches your vibe, right? So your vibe is like, you know, you're like, you can't even, the idea, like, you're like, I'm never going to smile again. It's never going to happen. And you're just like this sad, like shrunken, you know, your shoulders are like this, you're just awful. And you naturally match the vibe of that when you enter someone feeling that, because you don't want to seem unempathetic. So they're down. So you're like, I'm so sorry. And you're also down and you're like this. And you're like, you know, I'm so sorry. This is awful. And that can be great. And maybe that's what some people need, but it wasn't what I needed. Like, the last thing I needed was everyone else around me being low and sad. And, you know, and I think the worst thing people can do is when they start like just talking bad about your, in the case of divorce, like all these terrible things about your ex-husband. You're like, I know, obviously he's not the greatest right now, but it's like, it's almost annoying to hear because you're like, all right, but until like 2 hours ago, everyone loved him and it was fine. It's like it's meant to reassure you, but it just doesn't. What you need in that moment is to be reassured that you are great and that you're gonna be fine. And Nick that night, my brother-in-law, was like just the only one who, I know that's how everybody felt, but he was the only one who was just able to stand tall and like give me this big smile and just be like, best day ever. This is going to be the best day of your life. You got this. I can't wait to see what you do next. This person was holding you back. This is going to be the best day of your life one day, Annie. I promise you. And like, that was just life changing because it, even though it sounded nuts at the time, I was like, like, I think somewhere deep, deep down, I completely knew he was right.
Wow. And because I think we always say, oh, find people to sit in the pain with you. And you know,
you need that too. I think you need a bit of everything. But maybe there's going to be a lot of people that are there to sit in the pain. But I mean, you have to read the room, right? Like, if you can be the one who comes in with a big smile and just reminds someone of their strength and of how great the road ahead is going to be because you know them and you know what they're capable of, you know, you need that person too. And not everybody knows to be that person because they're afraid to seem unsympathetic or, you know, just like totally not come off in the right way. But someone who really knows you, really loves you, can do that for you and can be that for you and when you really, really need it.
Oh, so beautiful and just such a life-changing aha moment. It's such a gift to you for the rest of your life to have had that moment with him.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not a big tattoo person. I have one that I regret. But after that day, I was like, I need to get this tattooed on my body. Like, I might do it one day still, but it was beautiful words to live by. And it comes into play anytime something falls apart. You know, it's always just good to think there might be a day, and there probably will be, that I look back at this as like, thank goodness that happened, because it led me to here, or it taught me this, or it ultimately, it got me to where I am now. And where I am now is great. And so thank goodness that happened. It's why I wouldn't take anything back about the whole book. I started that way. I start by in my lowest moment, but then saying, if I could go back and change anything, I wouldn't change a thing. It all got me here.
Yeah, I love that. And I love when that all clicks into place. When I was sick, I remember thinking, I don't know why this is happening to me right now, but maybe someday I will. And I trusted that one day I would have the answers. And thankfully, I got my answers. And, you know, I can see it now as a blessing. Where did you get the courage to follow your dreams then and move to Paris?
You know, I think the fact that I had studied abroad here as a kid, I was 19 when I did my semester here. And then that gave me so much confidence just in my ability to like go somewhere and build something where I didn't know anyone. So I learned, like I gained it along the way. Like I just gained what I was capable of by attempting to do things on my own and showing myself what was possible. And so it was compound. Like it wasn't like I just mustered the courage in that moment. I looked back and I took inventory of everything I'd already done. And if we could do that more for ourselves, if we would stop in a moment of fear where we think like, I don't have the skill set for this. I don't have the acumen. I don't have the courage. If you really stop and look back and think about what have I done though? Like what other things have I made it through? Not this exact situation, but similar. I've gotten through this. I figured that out. I was able to conquer this, climb that mountain. Like you have to kind of just sometimes give yourself the credit you're due, because we do a lot of talking ourselves down. The first, you know, who looks in the mirror and gives himself a compliment right away? We look in the mirror, our brain goes right to something wrong. Oh, my hair is awful, or my face is puffy today, or my whatever. Who just looks in the mirror and is like, well done, you got through this. So you almost have to stop sometimes and give yourself the credit that is owed to you in these moments of fear to be like, I got this. I can do it. I did these other hard things. I'm going to be able to get through this one too.
Oh my God, this is so inspiring. Like everything you're saying, I'm like, oh my God, if we could only live like that. But sometimes we just need a reminder from a strong woman.
Or you need to go through something really hard that then teaches you the lesson. And that's why you don't want to change the things that go wrong, because I don't know who I would be right now if nothing had ever been difficult, you know, like, but I know it wouldn't be me, and I would be some other version of myself, but I wouldn't be this version of myself, and I wouldn't trade away this version of myself for anything. So even though I had to go through a lot of really sad and difficult things, I'm grateful for them, because it taught me so much about not only myself and what I'm capable of and, you know, what really matters to me. But it taught me a lot about other people. And, you know, if it's always just like this easy breezy life, I don't know what the end person would be. You have to go through those hard things to really figure out the ultimate version of yourself that you are. And I don't think I'm through it. You know, I'm well expecting other hard things along the way.
Yeah, and it's not that the tough times get easier, but I suppose the acceptance of the tough times, because you're like, I'm going to learn something along the way here, so bring it on. I don't know if this is too much of a personal question, but like, would you have stayed forever, do you think? Or do you think something else would have gotten in the way along the way?
I don't think I would have. I think that's what I've thought about that before, of like, would I still be married right now and living in, you know, Florida or where, you know, wherever, you know, what I'm thinking, what the goals of my ex-husband were. And I don't think I could have done it. I know I would have stayed in therapy with my therapist. And I think she was helping me realize so much about that relationship and much about myself that I don't think I would have stayed. I mean, our marriage would have never worked. Just like now, knowing everything I know, it would have never worked. But even if like cards had been different and I was with someone who was, you know, sort of begging me to stay rather than, you know, what my ex-husband was doing, which was very much like, I think this needs to end. I think I would have come to the realization on my own eventually of, you know, I'm never going to be happy in this relationship. It's never going to give me what I need.
Yeah. Tell me about, because there's so many Irish people that live in Australia, and I suppose the culture in Ireland is we're all really close to our families, and that really came through in your book, you know, the beautiful relationship you have with your mum and dad and your family. And I wondered, you know, how hard is it for you to live in a different country, to have chosen France, because there's so many Irish people around the world and they feel guilty that they live abroad, yet they really want to stay there. And then other people who are too afraid to take the leap because of the ties to their family.
It is not easy, but for me is essential almost. I had a moment, I remember in therapy, where my therapist said to me, and I got offended. She was like, you might be too close to your family. And I was like, excuse me? You know, like, I was like, my family is the greatest blessing in my whole life. Like, are you insane? Until I realized what she meant was, you make decisions about your life because of your family. And you let you, and they're not asking you to. My family never said, you have to stay here. At that moment in my life, I needed to be focusing on me. I couldn't spend every day hanging out with my mom and dad, you know? Like, I didn't want to take a 9-to-5 job so I could hang out with my mom and dad every night. I was like, I have a whole new life I need to build, and I need to go chase that. And I'm not going to do it if I stay here and spend every day babysitting my nieces and nephews, having dinner with my parents. And it was a hard thing for me to do, but I knew, like, if I need to end up the woman I want to be, with the life I want, I need to go do this. And maybe it's not forever, but it's something I need to go explore and see where it takes me.
Yeah. There was a gorgeous girl who came to one of our run club meets, and she said she lives in Australia and she was home, and she said, I'm only a day away, which I thought was really nice. And she said, when I'm homesick, that's what I say to myself. What do you do when you're homesick?
I mean, I usually book a flight, like truly. And I usually go home probably to the US like five at least times a year. So it's really like every other month. So it's never that far in my head. And I mean, thankfully now I FaceTime my mom and dad every day. You know, you are able to feel so connected to people. And that is the beauty of our technology and social media and all of that. Like, you can feel like you're really involved in someone's life, even though you're on the other side of the world. But when I'm really, really homesick, like last summer, I really just wanted to be with my mom and dad, and my boyfriend and I booked flights, didn't tell them, packed our bags and showed up in Ohio as a surprise and had a great week there. And it was worth more than any elaborate vacation or design or anything I could have ever spent my money on.
Oh God, that's everything I needed to hear. Thank you so much. Last question, Anna. Every time I finish a podcast, I just ask my guest to leave us with a mantra or a little affirmation maybe that's been speaking to you recently, or has there been one?
Don't just automatically think like, okay, what now? What next? Like, what bigger thing? What better thing? What's the new thing I need to chase? Like, stop and recognize that, like, what I have right now is something I used to want and pray and strive for and work for. And so it's okay to stop and enjoy it and be recognize that you have it and be grateful, instead of just automatically go, well, what's the next thing? What do I need now? What do I need to be doing? You know, who are we trying to prove it to? You know,
yeah.
Like, because it almost is that, like, who are we trying to prove to that we have another thing we're doing, or a better thing, or we're building this, or we're trying this? Like, just make it about yourself. And then when you really ask yourself, like, can I actually just not worry about what anybody else thinks about what I'm doing right now? Can I just focus on letting myself be grateful for how far I've come?
Wow. Anna, thank you so much. You're honestly such an inspiration. I would recommend your book so much. I had you in my ears, and then I also bought the physical copy. It's absolutely beautiful. Congratulations. A New York Times bestselling author. Like, that is just bucket list.
I hope to make it. Ireland is on my bucket list. I've never been.
You would be welcomed with open arms. So, Anna, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I hope I'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Anna. And yeah, I think her energy is really infectious, and there's so many aha moments in there. I think we've all felt invisible at one point in our lives. It may not be in our relationship, but it could be, you know, in work or at a meeting, sitting even with a group of friends at a table. Like, we've all felt it. And it's so inspiring to know that we can reclaim our own magic. It lives within us. It's there. It exists. It's sometimes about reconnecting with it. So I'll leave a link to Anna's Instagram page in the show notes if you want to send her a little message. I'm sure she'd really appreciate it. And if you want to grab some pals and have a bit of a boogie this Christmas, why not come to Let It Glow at the National Concert Hall? That's our show this Christmas. We're going to turn it into a winter wonderland. We're going to have amazing live Christmas music, inspiring talks, plenty and plenty and plenty of laughs. So why not come along to that? I'll leave a link in the show notes. And I'm so excited to bring this season to you of lots of amazing guests. So I guess I'll see you next week.